Climate Camp and Climate Justice Action are both saying that civil disobedience and direct action is a valid and necessary tactic. We need to do it. And if you look back at when there's been social change on some really the fundamental issues that we take for granted now, like freedom of speech or equal rights, they've been caused by a small number of people taking action and often using civil disobedience. And we feel that the situation with climate change is exactly the same. We need to cause social change, and that civil disobedience is a very effective way of doing that.
Everything we take for granted. Weekend, gay rights, the right to form a union, the abolition of slavery, everything was won by disobedience.
Welcome to the 300 to 350 show, the weekly independent climate change bulletin that's made for Resonance 104.4 FM in central London and syndicated by other community radio and independent media around the globe. This week we take a look at the civil disobedience that is planned for the UN Climate Summit in Copenhagen in December that aims to highlight the voices of the powerless majority and raise the spectre of climate justice as a central issue in the talks. On the 16th of December, activists plan to enter the conference centre and take over the summit for a day and set the agenda. And during the second week of the talks, there will be at least one high-profile action happening every day. I spoke to Chris Kitchen from the London Climate Camp neighbourhood to find out more. Did Climate Justice Action come out of Climate Justice Now? Is there any connection between the two?
There is a connection, but it's not that one came out of the other. Climate Justice Action is the network that came out of all the discussions that have been going on about the mobilisation for Copenhagen and what kind of mass actions to take there and what the grassroots movement's reaction should be to the talks and that kind of thing. So that's where Climate Justice Action came from. And Climate Justice Now is a group of NGOs with a lot of groups representing people from the Global South, which formed at the Bali Climate Talks. They felt that the Climate Action Network, which is like the main NGO body within the talks, they felt it wasn't being radical enough and it wasn't really talking about climate justice issues enough. And it was too wound up in the process. They formed this new network, I suppose calling for more radical action and with more emphasis on climate justice, called Climate Justice Now. And the connection between Climate Justice Now and Climate Justice Action, I suppose, is that there's kind of quite a big overlap in terms of which groups are involved. But also, both networks are kind of co-organising this action on the 16th of December, the Reclaim Power Action, which is where we're planning to take over the summit for a day and hold a People's Assembly for Climate Justice.
Doesn't really come more audacious than that. It's a dramatic proposal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What is the thinking behind it?
Well, I suppose that the thinking behind it is that the UN talks themselves have been discussing the problem for 15 years now. Basically, they're not coming up with solutions to climate change, and that the proposals that are being put forward, that are being discussed, are largely based around false solutions and have got such a strong emphasis on market-based solutions that no other things are being considered. They don't really address the fundamental issues of social justice that are associated with climate change. It's not recognising that the North is responsible for the problem and it's going to be the Global South that are paying for the problem. And it's not addressing the fundamental economic and political problems that have caused climate change. So yes, all that kind of dissatisfaction with the process and all the people who feel their voices aren't being heard in the process, and all those that are having a more sort of radical analysis of the problem, we decided we need to make a very, very strong statement, basically. So taking over the summit for a day and holding our own People's Assembly where we decide the agenda is our way of doing that. And obviously we're running out of time as well, you know. We haven't got the luxury to carry on discussing things and not do anything.
I mean, with a kind of coalition, I imagine there's kind of a lot of diverse opinions, perhaps, but there must also be a certain kind of common platform that you've arrived at as well.
Can you talk
about that?
We've been meeting for over a year now, actually. There's been various meetings, about 150 people been coming to meetings, and we've discussed all sorts of things. So a lot of it's been discussing, what action we're going to take at the summit. But we've also been talking about our shared goals and our shared philosophy, if you like. So, I mean, we have got a series of aims that we're saying we're going after. And that's including things like leaving fossil fuels in the ground. We're saying we need to recognise indigenous and forest people's rights over their land. We're saying we need to we need to recognise and make reparations for ecological debt. We're saying we need to massively reduce consumption of resources in the north, and we're saying that in general we need a greater amount of local and community control over resources. So we have got like a lot of shared understanding, and it's, I suppose, the principal way of summing it up is saying we're talking about social justice and climate change being the same issue that we need to address at the same time.
And those are the kind of things you'll be raising as the kind of, if you're kind of taking over the agenda, as it were, on the 16th of December, yeah?
For sure, yeah. Yeah. We'll be talking about all those issues, and there'll be a lot of people inside the talks who'll be taking part in the action as well, who already kind of will be in the Bella Centre, and there's likely to be a large walkout from possibly including some national delegations of the talks themselves. And we particularly want to give a greater voice to those people who aren't being heard in the talks. And so, generally speaking, that means people from the global south and particularly indigenous communities.
So you're kind of envisaging some kind of point of crisis, in a sense, in terms of where the talks are arriving at.
I mean, it
already seems, in fact, that they might have kind of reached some kind of crisis and might not be sufficient to address the problem.
But I mean, in a sense, that fits well with what we've been saying all along. Since we've kind of like formed the network, we've been saying that the COP process, the Conference of Parties, the UNFCCC, isn't going to solve the climate crisis. And it's come as like no surprise that politicians aren't coming together and making an agreement. And the approach we're taking is that we're not trying to lobby the process, and we're not actually asking for the leaders to make a deal. We're saying that in order to deal with climate change, it's fundamentally about social change, and it's going to have to be a global social movement that leads to an answer.
Okay, so could you talk us through some of the kind of individual actions? It's almost like one action a day, focusing on it,
yeah,
with a kind of different theme, if you like. Do you want to talk
us
through some of those?
Yeah, I mean, I'll try and give you a quick summary, if you like. So the first mass action is on Friday the 11th. And I think it's kind of coming under the title Not Your Business. And it's basically addressing the fact that throughout the talks, they've been very heavily influenced by corporate lobbying. And we're saying that's fundamentally illegitimate, that corporations have got no say in how we should decide our future. So there's going to be mass actions taken against the business lobbyists, and I imagine it's going to involve trying to stop them taking part in the talks in whatever ways. And there may well be some kind of mass action at the business centre, which is usually what they have somewhere at the talks. Yeah, so on Saturday the 12th, there's going to be a big march going from the Danish Parliament to the Bella Centre. And on part of that march, it's going to be a big block called System Change, Not Climate Change. And that's sort of what Climate Justice Action is supporting on that day. The day after that, there's a mass action called Hit the Production. So I suppose previously within the direct action movement in Europe against climate change, it's tended to focus on either power stations or airports or sort of large individual emission sources like that, or energy infrastructure. And this is trying to say that actually we really need to address the problem of constant economic growth and overconsumption and overproduction. And it's chosen the harbour of Copenhagen as being like a symbolic target of it. So the idea is actually to occupy and shut down the harbour on that day. Monday the 14th, there's going to be a No Borders Day of Action, calling for no borders, no climate refugees. So the No Borders movement is trying to say that climate change is fundamentally related to the issues that they protest on. And it's saying that if climate change goes ahead, there's going to be a massive increase in both the number of climate refugees, but also like the state response to movement of peoples. And it's going to become a really serious issue. In fact, it already is. A lot of the things they're doing in Europe, clamping down on immigration and sort of making fortress Europe, is like, in a way, preempting climate change. There's also, I think, there's going to be a day of action on reparations for climate debt that day. I don't have much more details about it. So then on Tuesday the 15th, there is a day of action on agriculture and climate change, and it's saying, how about we need to change the food system rather than the climate? I think that's being organised by Via Campesina, if I'm right. So Via Campesina is an international peasant and land workers movement, and it has millions and millions of people involved in it. It's a,
a huge movement, and it's really exciting to have them involved in the stuff we're doing in Copenhagen. And the day after that is the Reclaim Power Pushing for Climate Justice action that I was talking about. So that's where we're aiming to disrupt the sessions for a day and hold our own People's Assembly for climate justice. And so to give a kind of a description of what the day is going to look like, the idea is that there's going to be a publicly announced starting point for a climate justice block, which is going to approach the Bella Centre and aim to arrive at the conference area at 10 and try and get inside the conference area. And then there'll be various affinity groups that are all converging on the conference area at 10 o'clock. And then the idea is to hold the People's Assembly like at the main entrance to the Bella Centre at 12 o'clock. And the idea is then that the people inside that are participating in the action will disrupt the sessions and mobilise people to walk out of the talks and leave the Assembly.
So the UK kind of climate camp movement is going to be feeding into this. Maybe you can just say briefly what's planned in terms of if people want to get involved in terms of transport and accommodation.
There's actually going to be accommodation arranged for anyone arriving in Copenhagen. There's going to be lots of, I mean, it won't be kind of luxury accommodation, but there will be free accommodation for people to use. And I think climate camp's going to try and get like a building to ourselves or something like that. And yeah, as you mentioned, we are organising coaches to go there and back. And I think they leave on the 11th and arrive back on the 18th. And it will be £100 return. But if people do want to go on the coach, they really need to book as soon as possible because we're going to have to make the final booking fairly soon. So it'd be great if everyone could come, but we really, really need to get people to book their tickets now. I mean, there's some other possibilities. Like we might try and arrange a meeting with, because there's going to be people from climate camps in all sorts of different countries. I don't know if you know, there's about 19 or 20 different climate camps around the world this year in all sorts of different places. And so we quite like to get like a whole bunch of people from different climate camps together and just have a bit of a discussion about where things are going and share some experience and knowledge. And there's also, like, so part of this Reclaim Power action on the 16th is going to be something which is called the Bike Block. I think it has a strapline putting the fun between your legs. And it's going to be some kind of bike-made construction piece of art, mobile device of resistance, which is being built in Copenhagen from hundreds of bikes. And climate camp is going to be taking part in that as well, so that'd be quite a fun thing that people can go and get involved in preparing for, and then on the day it will give people something to participate in as well.
Some of these kind of solutions that you're putting forward are fairly common sense, I would say. But to get those on the agenda, really the tactic you're using is civil disobedience, basically.
Absolutely,
that's the way you think is best to put them centre stage.
That's right. I mean, climate camp and climate justice action are both saying that the civil disobedience and direct action is a valid and necessary tactic. We need to do it. And if you look back at like when there's been social change on some really the fundamental issues that we take for granted now, like freedom of speech or equal rights, they've been caused by a small number of people taking action and often using civil disobedience. And we feel that the situation with climate change is exactly the same. We need to cause social change, and that civil disobedience is a very effective way of doing that.
There was a piece by Naomi Klein in The Guardian, I think,
during
the week.
Yeah, I did read it, yeah.
Talking about Seattle being the movement of movements, kind of coming out party, and then the...
This is the honeymoon, was it? Yeah.
Saying that this is a bit Copenhagen will be the kind of coming of age of the movement of movements.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Do you think she's kind of overstating the case, or do you think this is a genuinely kind of historical moment on that kind of level?
I think it certainly has the potential to be, yeah. I think we're at one of those points where we need to make a decisive step. We need to sort of change the agenda. We need to change the politics of climate change. And I think the fact that there's all sorts of different movements for social justice now realising that climate change being, I suppose, like the biggest symptom of the problem, we're all beginning to recognise it's all wound up in the same problem. And this kind of concept of climate justice is really effective in kind of bringing that all together. And so I don't think she's overstaying it, no. I think it really could be a really significant historic moment. But yeah, I guess it has to have people to turn up to make that happen. So hopefully there will be thousands and thousands of us there in Copenhagen in December.
I understand for people that will want to remain in the UK or prefer to remain in the UK, there's some kind of action going on here on the 5th of December as well, possibly?
Yeah, so the 5th of December is going to be when there's a big march called The Wave, which is being organised by Stop Climate Chaos and some other NGOs and Campaign Against Climate Change. And Climate Camp and the sort of the London neighbourhood of Climate Camp has decided to occupy a space of a high-profile climate criminal, I think it is. And that target hasn't been announced yet, but I think the idea is that after the march is finished that there'll be a space somewhere will be taken, and then I think the plan is to hold it for 48 hours. So if there are people that can't get to Copenhagen for whatever reason, then yeah, I'd say go along and join in on the action in the UK as well.
I think in the States there's a focus around November the 30th, isn't there?
Sure, yeah, yeah? It's a really big day in the States, yeah. I mean, the 30th of November is the 10th anniversary of Seattle. And so for a lot of people, and particularly in the States, that's quite a significant landmark. And it's being used as like a day of action on climate justice in the States. And I think there'll be actually actions going on all over the world. And that's really going to kind of like build up the pressure towards Copenhagen and really add to the momentum. One of the things that I'm really looking forward to about Copenhagen, and actually has been a really fascinating part of the process like leading up to it, is all the different activists coming from all over the world and people having their own cultures and their own ways of organising and their own issues as well. And seeing that all coming together, admittedly it's not always an easy process, but it's been a really, really interesting and really fascinating process, and I think it's got a huge amount of potential. And so I'm really looking forward to going to Copenhagen to continue those discussions, to try and work out like where we're going to go in 2010 and to really make some really solid plans. But having the kind of effective networks at local, regional and national and international level, right? They were some of the things that maybe weren't followed up after Seattle, and I think that's where we could hopefully do things a bit differently.
Okay, and I mean all those discussions and the climate justice action organised on that kind of horizontal kind of consensus.
That's right, yeah.
Open and transparent kind of manner, yeah?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I suppose that's a bit of practising what you're preaching, and we're saying there's real fundamental problems about our political system, so we try and organise in an open and participatory way, and yeah, we're trying to move away from the ideas of having hierarchy and power structures, and we're saying that anyone can be involved in this process.
Okay. All right, any last words?
Come to Copenhagen. It's going to be really, it'll be an amazing experience.
That was Chris Kitchen from the London Climate Camp neighbourhood, and Chris made it into The Guardian recently as someone who was stopped at the UK border on his way to a planning meeting in Copenhagen under the Terrorism Act. Here's Francis Wright, a legal advisor to the Camp for Climate Action, on that incident and the legal context for the protests in Copenhagen generally.
Well, so far we've had 4 people who've been stopped in that way. It's really hard to tell. There's certainly the real possibility that there will be delays as people travel across the borders, and I think it would probably be useful to talk about what could happen at the UK border. Okay. Because what the activists so far have been stopped under is Schedule 7 of the Terrorist Act, which gives the police the power, simply on the basis that they believe a person is present, to enter or leave Great Britain, so not exactly a high test, to stop, search and question and detain a person for up to 9 hours to determine whether they are or have been connected with acts of terrorism. So as I say, this power has already been used, and the very significant part about that, apart from its potential to cause delays, is there is no right of silence. It's a criminal offence to fail to answer the questions, and it's subject to 3 months imprisonment or a level 4 fine. So it's quite an onerous provision that has been used.
Right. There's no right to silence under this particular UK law.
That's right. And that's probably the most significant thing for people to know. Plus this ability to detain people for up to 9 hours if they're not cooperating. Obviously, in our bust cards, we will be giving contact details for lawyers, specifically for the borders. But in reality, there probably isn't a lot of point in using them, given that you don't have the right of silence. And my understanding of the kind of questions that have been asked of activists so far are There presumably is some list of questions they ask to identify potential terrorists, and they're sort of, what job did your father have? What job does your mother have? What kind of papers do they read? Very wide-ranging personal questions.
Sounds very kind of thought police stuff, really. I mean, obviously, people aren't going abroad to commit acts of terrorism. They're likely to be going abroad to perhaps either march peacefully or to engage in peaceful acts of civil disobedience.
That's right.
So this law really shouldn't be used, really.
Absolutely not. That's the first border. Obviously, there are a number of borders to go if you're travelling by coach. And my understanding is that there should be support at each of those borders in terms of lawyers available. What I understand is going to happen is the Danish police will reinstate their border control on their road system, which wouldn't have been in place ordinarily.
In terms of within Copenhagen, within Denmark, and how these marches and street protests might be policed, is there anything that people should be particularly aware of?
Well, I think some areas are very similar. So if we looked at stop and searches, for instance, and laws in relation to knives and drugs, they're similar. So I think people can work with that. Some of the areas are stronger than we would have in the UK. So things like masking up, the law seems to be wider in its formulation than we're used to. So it is possible to arrest someone for carrying an object that would be used to mask up, and if someone is on the way to a protest. Some legislation will be very familiar, so there's a possibility of really a kind of super form of kettling, a form of preventative arrest, where the police can detain you or a group of people or a whole bus or coach load of people for a maximum of 6 hours. And if new legislation goes through, and it's on its way through Parliament now, then it will be for a maximum of 12 hours. And that's familiar for us, but that kind of clarity of how long, that's a longer period than we're used to for kettling, really.
And there is some, as you say, some new legislation that's been tabled in Parliament in advance of the UN climate talks. Do you know something about those proposals and what their current status might be, if they're likely to come in? I know that there's been quite a lot of opposition amongst trade unions and environmental organisations, and people like Christian Aid and Friends of the Earth have been opposing it here as well.
Yes, absolutely. Well, they seem very onerous legislation. It is hard to understand why it's necessary. They have a perfectly good set of public order legislation already. Having said that, my understanding is that they are still progressing through Parliament, but I'm not close enough to know whether it's going to make its way through. One of the things that it does is significantly increase the penalties around some of the offences, to the extent that some of them actually increase significantly. So there are some areas where the fines have gone up to, in sterling terms, £6,000. The potential there, whether or not that's actually going to materialise in practice in terms of what happens to foreign nationals, I think is a completely different matter.
Okay.
Whether or not this is really intended as a deterrent rather than something they're going to actively look to use, I don't know.
In terms of legal support whilst people are there, and if people want to get further information before they go, is there anywhere you can point them to?
Yes, the Climate Collective's website has a legal briefing from a group of students in Denmark. We have on the Climate Camp a legal briefing which is longer because it's formed from a number of different sources. I have to say they are in some places contradictory, which is why we haven't attempted to identify which ones are correct. There is also going to be legal support available on the ground. The exact form that takes, I'm not sure. I understand the there will be a main information point where people can access that. And I'm hoping that more information will start to come out by the time people are heading out there. So there will be a legal team. There won't be specifically a climate camp legal team, but there will be a legal team on the ground.
You were going to say something about how people should respond on arrest.
Yeah, so on arrest, very similar to the UK, people should definitely be exercising their right of silence until they've had legal advice. They are required, and it would be sensible to tell the police their name, nationality, date of birth and address. That's the requirement there, and the recommendation coming from Danish lawyers is that they then exercise their right to silence. It would appear that for foreign nationals they can be held for up to 72 hours before they're put before a court. They will have access to legal advice for that court hearing, and they obviously need to use that. The Climate Camp has issued a recommended lawyer for that, and there are a number of other lawyers that are being used by other groups going out there.
Anything else that might be useful for people?
After they're arrested, if they are, there is a possibility of claiming compensation for a wrongful arrest. The key thing is they will need to act much more quickly than they do in the UK. So there's a deadline for filing a compensation claim of 2 months. So really, pretty much as soon as they get back, they're going to need to identify how they go about doing that. And we'll hopefully have some information on that immediately afterwards.
As you say, there's a danger with these things, isn't there, of kind of scaring people off, but it's also important for people to kind of know what they're up against, I guess, as well.
Absolutely. So the Danish lawyer we've been in touch with, when we've asked them, what do you think might happen, he's certainly talked in terms of the likelihood would be that people would be extradited so that they can't return for a period of time to Copenhagen, that they may well find for more serious offences themselves being held in custody and serve at least half of the time of the custody time for an offence and then being sent back to the UK. Was of the view that the European arrest warrant was less likely to be used and they would more likely have people serving time for part of the custody sentence. Don't know. People are just speculating, really.
Do I remember hearing or reading something to the effect that Danish prisons are already pretty full? Do you remember reading anything along those lines?
I believe they are, although, again, I'm being told that from a lawyer there that they're making a lot of effort to clear space in the courts and in the prisons for the anticipated demand.
And what about the power of the media spotlight to deter abuses by police power? The whole of the world's media is going to be in Copenhagen.
Well, it's certainly helped in the UK, so one can only hope it will there. I mean, it obviously, the significant media presence, it must have an effect, if nothing else, on public opinion, which has an effect on how things are policed and the consequences. The likelihood is, and the past experience is, that generally, at these kind of international events, they're very keen to just get out of the country, foreign nationals, and they're not really pursued through the criminal justice system.
I guess people will have to bear in mind where the real criminals are in this in this whole situation, really.
Well, absolutely.
That was Francis Wright, a legal advisor to the Camp for Climate Action. Do visit the Climate Radio archive at www.climateradio.org, where you can find links and references relating to this programme and catch up with other programmes in this series which you may have missed. Thanks for listening.